Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John Wilkes Booth, contrary to what Trey has been saying, does not hit for me. Fuck John Wilkes Booth. But I will say,
I'm not the one who's been saying it. You're the one who's been implying
it. That's true.
It,
but I would like to say,
what's up, everybody? We're back, Airheads, here in the Virtual Air Stream Studios. It's time for another edition of Putting On Airs. How you doing there, Cho? We're
buddy.
a little giggly because he had a little mishap during one of the ad reads that y'all will hear later in the episode. I think you'll know when you hear it.
Yeah, but, and yeah. I'm in the mood. No, you know spoilers. What I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good day, buddy. I'm happy to be here with you. What's happening? What's up? I forgot to tell you. I found a millionaire shortbread recipe that looks like even I could do it. And I'm probably going to film, I'm going to film it and put it on watchpoa.com, but like, I'm pretty excited, but I'm certain what's going to happen is it's going to look awesome. I'm going to feel great about it. I'm going to taste it and be like, not at all like Scotland.
Millionaire shortbread is a staple of mine. I've probably made millionaire shortbread more than anything else other than chocolate chip cookies and, the classic. And, I don't think it's going to not hit. It's kind of,
it'll hit.
It's like,
it can't not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, unless you, and I've never fucked it up. Like, so unless you, and I've fucked plenty of things up, and especially in the dessert world. So unless you fuck it like massively up, which I don't even know how you do that. Burning it or splitting the caramel somehow or something. But
even then, if you split the caramel, it would just be goo, but it would taste good.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it's going to hit. Yeah.
Right, but it's such a high standard that I have
that one
for what
Scotland
we have.
Was fair indeed.
Hey,
absolutely fantastic. It was so, what hits?
Not me, but I'm excited to finish talking about the Booth family a little bit today, mostly John Wilkes Booth. We will be getting into territory that I think most people are familiar with. Like, did you know that he shot Abraham Lincoln? I didn't know if you knew when I started on the Booth family.
I just knew about his career as an actor in the theater.
Yeah.
How celebrated he was. Well, that's going to hit. But before we get to all that, I was a thing I wanted to ask you if you saw, because I've seen it pop up a couple times on the internet recently. Did you hear about this dude who he was a millionaire business owner and he purposefully went homeless as a social experiment?
Yeah. So okay. Are you about to do the whole thing? Because I won't give away the game if you are.
I've seen articles about it and stuff, but there's a Twitter thread from another guy talking about it. And the guy who's like summarizing it, you can tell that it hits for him.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows.
Reminded me of Drew.
It does not hit for me. I think it's kind of funny the way this guy talks about it, because he talks about it like the whole thing does hit.
And the whole thing. Oh, you mean it's acting like the guy's acting like it hit for him what this guy is doing, like his intention.
And I think that makes it funnier.
Yes, me too.
So I'm a the dude on Twitter's name is Eddie Chang, and he's talking about a guy, Mike Black. Mike Black was a millionaire, went homeless as a social experiment. Now I'm going to read what Eddie Chang said. His goal: prove that anyone can make $1 million in 12 months with just a phone. In 2020, Mike Black made a bold move. He drained his bank account to zero, left his seven-figure business, and went homeless, all to prove that anyone can come back from rock bottom and inspire others. He publicly committed to this challenge. The early days tested Mike's resolve. He slept on benches, battling hunger and doubt, but he knew that this was bigger than him. It was about showing others what's possible. Failure wasn't an option. Mike had to find a way, no matter how hard it got. A turning point came when a stranger on Craigslist let Mike crash in his RV. It wasn't much, but it gave Mike a chance to regroup and strategize his next move. He used this small window of opportunity to plan his comeback, and he wasted no time. Mike got resourceful. He started flipping free items from Craigslist, acting as a middleman for profit. Every dollar went straight to survival. He stacked odd jobs on top: telemarketing, assistant work, delivery. Brick by brick, he was making his comeback, or so he thought. Rock bottom hit hard when Mike's bank overdrew and he found himself sleeping in a roach-infested RV. Most would throw in the towel at this point. For Mike, it only fueled his fire. Comfort was the enemy. This was the ultimate motivator to turn things around, and fast. A $1,500 marketing gig became Mike's lifeline. He moved into a shared room, saving every penny. Remember the RV guy? Mike bought the vehicle back for $2,000 and asked to repay the favor. With a small safety net, he could finally focus on building something bigger. Here we go. Mike zeroed in on creating a scalable e-commerce biz, not just any biz, but one with heart. He launched a coffee brand for dog lovers that donates. That donated proceeds to animal rescues. Still, he had to juggle this with marketing clients and documenting his journey. Sleep became a luxury. To fund his venture, Mike made bold sacrifices. He rented out his room and lived for free. Every extra dollar went straight into the business. He was all in, no plan B. Finally, he launched the brand. The machine was in motion, but then a devastating blow as Mike's dad was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and his world shattered. He dropped everything to be with his family, but he knew his dad would want him to keep going, so he dug deep, channeled his pain into purpose, and kept building. Failure was not an option. Back at it with renewed focus, Mike went full throttle. He implemented subscription models for recurring revenue. He commissioned viral videos to spread the word. Some days he woke up to hundreds of new orders. This was it. Momentum was building. Then another crushing setback. Two severe autoimmune diseases and a tumor left Mike in daily agony. He was running on fumes, barely able to function. Doubt crept in. Could he really keep going? That's when a message from a stranger changed everything. The stranger said Mike's story stopped him from ending his own life. And in that moment, it clicked. This wasn't about hitting $1 million. This was about inspiring others and showing them what's possible. Mike couldn't stop now. Too many people were counting on him, period.
Nope.
Still, Mike had to stop. He made $65,000, a far cry from $1 million, but still a massive feat from someone who started from zero. True achievement: building a viable business in weeks, overcoming shitty odds, and touching lives. Money comes and goes, but impact, that lasts forever. So, Cho, your initial thoughts on this story?
Well, I'm just now realizing that the one that I read was someone doing a parody of that, because all of it, but here's the thing, every single, probably the first 8 to 9 tweets that you read off were exactly the same. It was only at a certain point that I'm like, oh, I didn't hear this part. Somebody had posted all that, and then when his dad died or whatever, the next tweet was he inherited $2.2 million from his dad. Like, that was the climax of the whole thing. But anyways, which I was getting ready to be like, yeah, like, failure literally was not an option for this guy because it couldn't possibly happen. But like, the thing about this is, like, it don't hit for me either, because number one, it's essentially poverty fantasy camp. It's also, you know, not that we get political. This isn't political. This is human fucking nature. It's a slap in the face to be like, oh, everyone out there that's struggling, you're retarded. You know what I mean?
Well, see, that's, yes, I feel like the implication of social experiments like this is that it's people trying to prove once and for all
everyone's
that really
just lazy.
Homeless people are lazy and right. they could be. And anyone who isn't a millionaire just doesn't work hard enough
right.
and they're just lazy, because if you really wanted to be, you could be. And that's what he's trying to prove. And he failed miserably to prove
right.
that. Also,
which that hits
him. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, he went homeless on purpose. It's like, okay, did he take some kind of drug that made him hear
right.
the voice of God
right.
repeatedly all day? Like, yeah, does he have Vietnam flashbacks
right.
and shit? Is he hopelessly addicted himself to heroin? Like, do all that and then fucking talk. Then come talk to me.
Not
like,
even
get yourself hooked on heroin
right.
and go insane. And then try to get off the streets in 12 months.
And again,
even without that, he still didn't do it. So,
like, and not just that, you not just get hooked on heroin, systematically go burn every bridge that you have, right?
Right.
Literally make it to where failure is not an option. Like, you have to, because like this guy, it's hard to believe anyone would be friends with this fucking guy, but like, he still had, like, because this guy used to be successful in his phone, he still got all of those resources. He can still easily walk back into his life anytime he wants. Now, I know that he doesn't, like, it's not like he can get back all the money that he gave away, but he can definitely go get a high paying job like he used to have. He can definitely go crash at one of his friend's house. So it's like, when you're sleeping in that fucking roach infested RV, you do know you don't have to be doing it, which is a crucial difference between you and a homeless person.
That's the other thing, too. I'm not sure whether he gave, like, it doesn't say for
what
certain
he did with the money.
Yeah. Like, he could have just put it in a bank account and is like, I can't touch that
right.
for a year, but he still knows it's sitting there. And also, like, you said
he
could still go and get those old jobs and stuff. I mean, that's kind of what he did. Like,
yeah,
it says
right.
like, oh, he got a $1,500 marketing gig and he started working as a consultant and all this stuff. It's like all this shit that homeless people could totally do at
yeah.
any point. Like, any homeless person could get PA work
yeah.
off the street or like telemarketing jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, they can't do any of that.
He has
business acumen, because I assume he got an MBA or something. You know, he still has all those resources and experience and everything. And again, I really cannot stress this enough, is not a mentally ill drug addict.
Right. So, he also should have had to go, all those gigs that he got, he should have had to go into those interviews with his underwear on his head and shit in his pants. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
I know he didn't. Like, he just called one of his old buddies. He's like, hey, does Stanley have anything? I'm out here on these streets. You know? It's fucking
yeah.
stupid.
And the fucking, it just, the cherry on top of the whole thing for me was that, you know, he started a coffee company for dog lovers or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just such, like, it just sounds like AI generated made up bullshit
right.
or something. And also, I'm sure, like, what it's probably like, you know what drop shipping is?
Yeah. Like, kind of like the Amazon thing where you're the storefront and then.
But you're not really doing
right.
anything. It's like if you can just get traffic to.
You have a link on your Instagram.
Like, you pick a certain item, like. All I can think of is like vape shit right now, because it's like I buy vape shit from the internet. So it's like the vape website I go to, I guarantee you it's just like a through line or a go between to the manufacturers of
right.
the various vapes. And then they pack it and ship it or whatever. And you're just kind of like the point of sale.
Right.
I'm sure he just did that with some kind of existing coffee infrastructure.
Of course. He didn't make nothing.
And just labeled it. Like, branded it as like, this is for people who like dogs,
right?
As if dogs and coffee have anything to do with each other. But it's also like, I'm sorry, he knows how fucking insane dog people are,
right?
And that shit will work. But they'll be anytime dog people say anything dog related, it's like, oh, gotta have it. So, you know, it probably was marginally effective, but
also, let's think about this for a second. He failed miserably, right? He ends up only making $65,000, which, like, I'm not saying $65,000 isn't a nice, you know, some people wish they made $65,000 a year. But basically what he did was, here's what he did. He didn't prove that anyone can make $1 million in a fucking year. What he proved is how fucking hard it is just to survive in this goddamn world, and how hard you have to work to make the same amount of money that used to people made on a one income household and it could pay for everything. Like those type of people literally think like everyone on earth should be forced to never have a hobby, to never have any free time, to barely sleep. They think that's what life is and should be for everyone, which is just to survive, by the way, not to have a boat, just to like not starve to death.
Right. Yeah, I know. I don't understand it. There's also things in there, and this is just probably just the fault of the guy who summarized the Twitter thread. He's just not writing very clearly. But some of the things in there I didn't really understand. It said he like bought the
RV. Well, that's because you're not a millionaire, Trey. You don't know shit.
Like he said something like he bought the RV back for $2,000 and asked to repay the favor. And it's like, I don't know what that
is missing context
to mean. And like, yeah, also, I don't know this part, but like, I mean, his whole thing was to document this for social media, right? So I'm assuming this guy has some kind of a following, or he got a following for this little journey he was on. And that's another thing too, that real homeless people don't have. And that's another hugely valuable resource when you're trying to start any kind of business or anything.
Right.
You know what I mean, if you got a bunch of followers, or you can, I don't know. It's like he monetized
being homeless.
Being homeless.
Right.
Yeah, but voluntarily.
And dude, like, this is not, I'm not making a joke against homeless people. I'm just being for real here. Like, let's say hypothetically, like, okay, you remember Rackham Willie from Athens?
Yeah. Rack Bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if Rackham Willie had come out now instead of then, he could definitely have an Instagram or something page set up for him that I guarantee you would have a bunch of followers. But Rackham Willie genuinely had problems. He wouldn't know how to monetize it himself. Like he wouldn't be able to keep up with all that shit. Do you know what I'm saying? Because, and this goes back to your point of like, this guy's not insane and on drugs.
Dude, fucking Rackham Willie pitching like Lucy products or Factor Meals or something like that. It would be a wild thing.
It'd be awesome.
And he like, I mean, you're right. Like if he was in the modern day internet, he would absolutely be doing that type of thing.
He'd have to have a person.
Did you know him?
I
didn't even remember he was in Athens.
Yeah.
You were in Athens.
Oh,
a lot,
we saw him so, all like, the time.
Did you interact with him?
No.
Was he like, for people that don't remember, surely, but it was back in the 2000s era internet, like pre-YouTube internet, there were viral videos of this homeless dude named Willie Rackham.
Yeah.
Right. He said, and he just said, you know, wild shit.
Rackham.
Rack. Yeah. Rack ball. Rackham. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I don't know, you know, as homeless people are wont to do. And it was hugely popular.
Dude.
So he was like, when you saw him, he was just homelessing around Athens all the time.
Yeah, like, but like the thing is like every time I went to Athens, it was to see my buddies who lived in Athens. And so like they didn't act touristy, if you know what I'm saying. Like they would just be like, over there, there's Rackham Willie. Anyways, we're going over to, like, it wasn't like, oh, we've got to go gather around and see Rackham Willie. You know what I mean? And like, also, I would have felt a little weird about like actually going up and interacting with him. But like definitely from, you know, we saw him and he was definitely fucking racking them, stacking them. You know what I mean? But yeah, just mostly from afar. But yeah, I wonder if he's surely not around anymore.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't think so. I know his career sort of fell off.
I've always just assumed that was because he ain't around anymore, because like his career was based on other people filming him and putting him on the internet.
Right.
And I don't see people randomly just stopping filming Rackham Willie unless there was no Rackham Willie. You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, it would have hit if they just turned him loose with a phone.
Yeah.
You reading Rackham Willie stuff?
No, I'm reading about there. I'm just looking for other things about this this dude we were talking about.
Yeah.
The part cracked me up too when the guy summarizing it said like he knew he couldn't give up. There were too many people counting on him, and literally the very next line is still he had to give up. Like just trying his best to make it like inspirational or whatever. But it's like this feels adjacent. I mean, it's not, it is adjacent to this whole, like, I know you were saying a minute ago, they won't want, they just want people to be working or whatever, but the whole like hustle hard grind set fucking thing that these dudes, it's mostly dudes, I feel like, and it seems like it's adjacent to alpha male incel type shit too. It's a lot of the same types of guy, like Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
dudes.
Yeah, he'd be like this.
Think that, like, I don't know.
They've just got something figured out that nobody else.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And dude, for the record, like, there are certain things that if you want to achieve them, you absolutely do need to hustle in some fashion. And there's nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong with being a hardworking person and having goals and want. Like, dude, in comedy, you know, like, you have to hustle a little bit. You've got to, every day when it seems like you should quit, you just don't, and then that's whatever. But, like, again, we are hustling to achieve something that is not necessary. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to achieve something that's not necessary and only a few people can have, yeah, you're going to have to fucking lose some sleep. But, like, these, again, back to my point, these guys act like that's how you should have to be just to have a regular job, you know, like, not just like, I hustle because I want more than just my house with my one car and whatever. But, like, those things are totally fine. And you should be able to just work regular and have those, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I just don't, the whole, it's also like tech bro, that aspect of it too. Just the whole like startups and entrepreneurship and businesses and what that means,
right,
is drop shipping coffee and saying it's for dog lovers and jerking yourself off over having that kind of idea and all those types of ideas like that. And they're so much bullshit. By the way, on a side note, for any well-read listeners, you recently posted an old well-read episode, a classic well-read episode, because it was the week that there was tornadoes in Georgia and deaths in my life, and so we didn't record that week.
Pretty bad week.
And
for you, I was fine.
Yeah, no, actually, you had like one of the best weeks you've had in years. Like the weekend that I had two consecutive funerals, I was getting pictures from you. Like, I'm down here eating sausage in hell in Georgia. I'm going to Masters on Monday. I've been drunk for 48 hours. My wife's titties are out. Fucking, how you doing? I'm like, I'm crying still. Thank you.
But didn't it make you smile?
Grandmother is still dead. My friend is still dead.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're hitting.
But I'm saying, if I was having a bad time and you texting me all the fun stuff you were doing, I'd be like, I'm glad Trey's having a good time. You know what I mean? It makes me happy. Yeah. I would. It's just that you've never texted me that because you're never having a good time. Like, it'll never happen.
Right. Yeah. I don't go to places that hit and do things that hit. But anyway, because of that, you posted a well-read classic episode,
mm-hmm,
and I listened to it just to see
we still hold up.
Yeah, and it was hitting for me. I thought it was funny. It was cracking me up. But at the end of it, and it's related to what I was just talking about, these like bullshit fucking startup ideas or whatever. It's like people are like, you know, I got an app for training people how to talk like Aaron Sorkin characters or whatever, right, you know, just like, whatever, just stuff that's such clear horse shit that people genuinely talk themselves into thinking it's going to be. At the end of that episode, we had agreed with our old friend from back in the day to do a little ad for this app he was working on. It was a wine app, right?
Yeah.
And I forgot that ever happened. And you were drunk. We were all drunk, I reckon, but you were definitely drunk. And like right before it ended, you're like, oh, right. Also, check out fucking Vost Wine or whatever the fuck it's called. Anyway, check it out while you can, because this shit ain't going to last much longer. I can tell that much. Ooh, it's a wine app. Who needs an app? You're just shitting all over it the whole time. Like, just such utter derision. Like, didn't even try to pretend that it hit for you, or that you thought it had a snowball's chance in hell.
It didn't.
And it was really cracking me up. And I also was cracking me up knowing, because I remember the context of what that was, but like, just the general audience listening to that episode,
no idea,
had to be confused. And they probably also had to think, like, is this a real, like, did someone solicit this ad read? You know what I mean? Something just flew in my eye, dog. A bug just flew in my eye. Anyway, they think you would, that you're just doing an ad read for a company that paid for it.
Right.
And that's how you were doing it. And that was funny to me, too, that knowing people had to be listening to that, going, like, what? This is
weird.
It doesn't seem like a good quality product the way he's talking about it.
It wasn't.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't even remember what the hook was supposed to be. Wasn't it like, it was like wine pairings and stuff?
I think it was like, you remember ratemybeer.com or something like that? I think it was, yeah. I think it was something similar to that, where you scan your bottle of fucking wine into their thing and it'll be like, hits or don't hit. And it's like, right. Who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You could just also look it up, or whatever. Or yes, like pairings. And it's like, it's red, it goes with steak. It's white, it goes with chicken. Another fucking thing about these goddamn hustle culture motherfuckers is how, like, they will, like, you'll hear people talking now about how, like, you know, I can't work for these minimum wage or whatever, blah, 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 and I need to get paid and yada, yada. And you'll have these fucking tech bros who are, like, a little older now who are like, well, these people just clearly don't want to work, you know, because when I was first starting out, I interned for free for 2 years, and that's just what you got to do. And it's right. Like, right, because your dad went to Harvard. You know what I mean?
And was paying for whatever apartment you were living in, and sure hit, and was buying you all the food you needed and stuff like that. And it is fine, but they just, I do not know how they don't understand that other people do not have that option, cannot do that. People that, like, there are so many people that they cannot work for free or they will die. Or they will at least be on the street because they don't have someone keeping them alive the way you have daddy. Or your trust fund or whatever.
Another point that dude inadvertently made, I'm sure that he wasn't trying to make this point, was when he said that every dollar he made went towards survival. That debunks their whole, like, well, see, this is why the poor stay poor, is because they just spend all their money on food, whereas they should be investing. It's like, this guy wasn't investing shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, he got money and he was like, I gotta get hamburger because I will fall over dead if I don't get hamburger. And turns out, if whatever I have left, you can't buy a Walmart stock for 10 cents. You know what I'm saying? So fuck that piece of shit.
I agree. Speaking of which, won't you tell us more about John Wilkes Booth? I know that's not a good segue because I know John Wilkes Booth hits for you, but
it's so hard. I'll tell you all about it right after this. Oh, buddy, Trey, I don't know about you, but this 420, I was celebrating big time. First off, it is my niece's birthday, but to celebrate the make-believe holiday that we have, I threw on some Star Wars, I trilled it up a little bit, played some super sweet music, and I popped me one of my chill gummies from Mood, and I had a blast. And by the way, there's not just one way to celebrate 420, and there isn't just one way to enjoy your THC. Mood can help you achieve just the right high with their federally legal flower, gummies, vapes, and more. I'm a gummy man. Browse by different moods and get 20% off your first order and a free THCA pre-roll with the promo code POA at hellomood.com. Trey, you've been getting in the mood lately, ain't you?
Have been getting in the mood. You know, we've talked before. I used to be a big proponent of the stony baloney lifestyle and whatnot. And then at a certain point, I started getting
older,
terribly afraid of everything all the time. I would get high and commune with the void and question my existence and just generally lose my mind to paranoia and fear. But that is no more with Mood. I don't know how they've done it, but they take all that nastiness out of it, at least for me. And now it just hits. I'm a gummy man too. I like their gummies. They got these like nighttime sleepy time gummies. They're blue. Those are my personal favorites. Sleep like a corpse. And I mean that in a hidden way. It really puts me down in the best way possible and helps me to chill. And I do enjoy chilling. I tell you what, Mood's latest and most potent breakthrough in the world of legal cannabis is their THCA flower. When you heat THCA, it changes into regular old THC, and that's what gets you the classic high feeling. They've got 10 different strains, the most potent they've ever offered. Mood has THC products you can trust and put an end to the guessing games with federally legal forms of THC extracted from hemp plants. They test all their products in third-party labs. They're all from small family farms. They're all pesticide-free. They got different strains for specific moods, like we talked about. Plenty of versatile products to go for whatever mood you're looking for. They're great for both beginner and veteran users. They got gummies, flower, pre-rolls, so much more. So y'all continue to celebrate 420. It's always 420 somewhere. That's what I always say.
Right.
Celebrate it exactly how you want to with Mood. Get 20% off your first order plus a free THCA pre-roll at hellomood.com with the promo code POA. That's HelloMood.com. Code POA. Hits.
Do it. Get in the mood.
This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know one man every hour, every day gets diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. With the month of April being National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for the early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use the promo code POA20, that's POA20, for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Y'all listen, I have a very personal connection to cancer, not testicular cancer. It was actually pancreatic cancer. It came from my daddy, one of the gnarliest cancers there is. But I've always thought that he probably knew something was wrong with him for quite a while before he ever actually went to the doctor, because that's just how us redneck men are about doctors. You can't have nothing wrong with it if you don't go to the doctor, except sometimes you can, and then you get cancer and die. And that's what happened to him because he didn't get checked early enough. You got to check yourself. And when it comes to your balls, you know, that takes the form of touching your own balls. You're already doing it anyway.
It hits.
Yeah, it does hit. And don't think you're too old to have testicular cancer. Well, anecdotally, one of my best friends in high school, his daddy, who was like 50-something at the time, he got testicular cancer, but he found it early and ended up surviving. And so it's very important to check yourself, and Manscaped wants you to remember that this April. Joe, tell them other stuff about Manscaped and how they
I will, but before that, dude, I had a buddy that got testicular cancer when we were 26. So, like, it's literally never too early to check your balls. And with this in mind, you can perform simple routine self-checks on your nads at home while enjoying Manscaped's products that you use every day, like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Makes sense, right? We use products daily to trim and maintain our boys down there. Well, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra features two interchangeable skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking just a little bit off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth and sleek, just like my head, with dual LED spotlights. Dude, you could do this in a swamp at midnight. You know what I mean? You got the LED spotlights. You got better visibility, making every single trim more precise. If you don't like making a mess, this thing is waterproof, by the way. So just go shave in the shower, rinse it right off. That's what I do. And you can bring this trimmer wherever you go, too, thanks to its wireless charging capabilities and travel lock feature. And also, do not sleep on the ball toner. All right. It makes you boys smell good even after you've sweat. I'm living proof, ask my wife. In addition to providing the right tools and solutions for comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That is why they will be donating $50,000, 50 big ones, to the Testicular Cancer Society. Help save lives and balls by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny educational check yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off plus free shipping with the code POA20, because like a famous American philosopher once said, take care of your mentals, your balls, and your chickens. I believe that was Trey. All right,
it's fucking hot up, man. This is the jacket, one of the jackets that I got when we were in Stratford upon Avon, which the reason I bought more than one is because I tried it on and I was like, holy shit, they know what hits for me over here. This fits so good, right? It was the perfect fit. Son, I'm straight up fucking Chris Farley wearing David Spade's coat in this motherfucker right now. On a plum fucking stank fat.
I've been on a plum stank fat too, trying to reel it back in at present. Leave that in. We're back, everybody. we're both on a fat.
A plum stank fat.
Breaking news. I knew I hadn't seen my last fat, you know, when I lost that weight recently. I lost that weight recently, and in my head, I was like, maybe that will have been my last fat. But then I was like, no, you'll have another fat,
dude,
and then another one, and another one. I mean, you know, I don't know another why I expected that to change. Yeah, another one. DJ Khaled, he's still on his first fat.
Yeah, I think so.
Or some people just have just one lifelong fat. Yeah,
and they just increase little by little.
I'm of the yo-yo philosophy of I've had countless fats in my life, and I've currently on another one right now. But like I said, I'm trying to get it fucking back under control. But anyway, John Wilkes Booth, last week we ended with
Where we ended we leave with, off? We ended with me talking about how his dad was an eccentric man who would often no-show and stuff like that, which is true. He did all that stuff. His father, Junius, died when John Wilkes was 14. And now John Wilkes Booth's older brother, Edwin, had taken after his father, and he had gone into the arts, into the theater. And it was because of Edwin that John Wilkes Booth decided, well, maybe I should give this a go. I think it was actually Edwin who was like, hey, this is what we do, and you're kind of pretty, so you should probably do it too, and I'll help you. Because at this point, Edwin was like probably arguably the most famous actor, you know, on, you know, I don't know if I want to say on Earth, definitely in America. And a lot of times that did mean on Earth, because the super famous American people would go over to England and vice versa, which if you remember from last
week.
So
that predates Hollywood?
Yeah.
That's wild to me.
Yeah.
Like now crazy. Everybody knows in the entertainment world, like you can be hugely famous in France and Americans right. don't know who you are. If you are famous in America, you're famous around the world.
Right.
But I always attributed that to Hollywood being the epicenter of global cinema and stuff. But obviously, we're talking about an era before cinema. So if you'd asked me to guess who was the hitnest at this type of thing back then, I would have said England. I would have said English actors were probably the biggest actors.
They were.
You know, Shakespeare mess.
They were big, obviously. They were really big. But Junius, you know, as I said,
he was English, right?
He was English, came over to America and became more popular in America than he was in England. And he was the most famous guy in England, which is weird. But like, yeah, I think it's just like it was a lot of traveling and stuff. And you know what I was thinking about, too, because we'd mentioned like all these guys before the movies, nobody gave a shit about these actors, which is like it's true. We don't give a shit about them now. Obviously, people gave a shit about them then. But if you think about the time that John Wilkes Booth died and how old he was, if John Wilkes Booth had never done this, he would have been in some early silent films, because they were making silent films in 1905, 1910. He would have been a 70 something year old guy, and they had plenty of old people in those movies. And I'm not saying he automatically would have been. I'm just saying, if thinking about that is wild to me, because you think of John Wilkes Booth as being so old, but it's like he could have lived to see the day where he had a small part in a movie, you know?
Yeah, that is wild. Yeah.
He
could have shot a bullet at the moon or stood on a moving train or whatever.
Yeah, because we think of like all these guys from back then, it just being so old, and it's like, I mean, it's really not, because like, you know, there were plenty of Hollywood stars at Wyatt Earp's funeral. You know what I'm saying? Like they were, and Wyatt Earp was in like some movies as like a background thing, just because he was really good friends with Tom Mix or whatever. Like they were just good buddies. And it's just interesting to me that like how much we evolved from 1865 just to 1920, you know what I'm saying? Whereas like, I don't know, 1965 to 2020 doesn't seem as starkly different to me.
Bro.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, they're probably like 1865 to 1920 is definitely wild too, but
it's just that we had TV in both, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean,
No, you're right.
Like, just imagine smartphones in the 1965 or whatever.
No, I know.
Internet, video games, I mean, any of that shit. I mean, movies. Look at the difference between movies now and then. In 1865, they went from like telegrams and trains to radio and, you know, early cars.
Yeah.
20 though, still a lot of places were still doing horse stuff.
Well, dude, I mean, if we're talking technologically, the difference between 1965 and 2020 is the most stark 60 year time period.
Yeah, well,
that's
ever
fucking.
What you meant. What
I just meant?
Meant,
I just meant the people and like, I don't know. I just can't, when I think about, my grandmother was born in 1920, right? It's wild to me to think that like her daddy could have seen Booth get shot. You know what
I
mean?
Oh, well, yeah. No. Okay. Yes.
I just meant the difference in time. 1965
like how close
doesn't seem
we
like
are to yes. To actual history. Well, yeah, yes. Part of that's because America is such a young country.
I know. It's
like
wild.
Our history is. Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's like we've talked about it before on this show about how, you know, the seventh president of the United States, John Tyler, has a living grandchild, not great grandchild, grandchild. It's insane. And as far as this particular topic, you could Google right now. You can go on YouTube right now and watch a clip from a 1950s variety show. Yeah. Variety show, like one of those, like Texaco presents the All Time Fun Hour, or whatever, hosted by fucking Dinah Shore, or whatever the fuck, like that type of thing. But not one of the famous ones. Like it wasn't Ed Sullivan or nothing. It was some other one. And there's a guy on there.
It was the one that John that from the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, same show where they find out that he's a criminal mastermind or whatever.
You talking about Catch Me If You Can?
Catch Me If You Can, yeah. It's the same show that his character was on, where they have a person and there's an interesting fact about him. Yeah, and
it was it like Don't Lie to Me or something.
Yeah,
I've got
like
a secret.
I've got a secret.
I've got a secret. So yeah. Yeah, they have a person you have to, and like they have celebrities on to ask this special guest questions and stuff. And try to figure out what their big secret is.
You have that clip?
I do. I found
it. Let's pull it up.
This is wild.
Mr. Seymour, would this person have ever been president of the United States?
Was he ever president, this man?
Well, I think he was once.
Would it have been Abraham Lincoln?
It was Abraham Lincoln, yes.
You witnessed something to do with Abraham Lincoln. Was this a pleasant thing?
Was it a pleasant thing you saw, sir?
Not very pleasant, I don't think. I was scared to death, over.
He said, no, he was scared to death.
Would it have had anything to do with the President Lincoln's death, by any chance?
Unfortunately, yes.
Did Mr. Seymour witness the shooting of President Lincoln?
It'd be and so funny.
It's just wild as hell.
It's crazy.
Like, it's a, you know, a television show from, like, you know, around the time my dad was born. Our dad was, like, born.
My granny was like, 45.
Right, a television show with the dude, and he's old as fuck in it, but a guy who literally saw Abraham Lincoln get shot in the theater that night. I mean, it's fucking, it's wild. I mean, yeah, it's not, it ain't that long ago. None of it is that long ago.
How hard would it have hit if he'd been like a Southern sympathizer, and she said, was what you saw a pleasant thing? And he was like, hell yeah, Steve.
Right. There's other videos out there you can find of TV shows that have Confederate veterans on them and stuff. And that they're just, you know, again, they're 110 and can't hardly move or whatever, but it's like these guys fought for the Confederacy and now they're on TV.
Dude.
And you know, like the earliest days of television and shit.
One of the most famous instances of that is FDR actually had like some sort of like, I don't know, olive branch type meeting where like he gave a speech and encouraged people from the Union and the Confederacy to both come. And he was just going to basically talk about how like, you know, we're a way different country now and we're unified. And he's got all these dudes sitting in front and they're all wearing their blues and their grays. And bro, it is fucking comical how old these motherfuckers are. Right. Every single one of them. You remember those wood things that people used to put in their ears so they could hear? Every single one of these old fucks has one of those. Some of their eyes are just like down in their cheek, you know, like it is crazy. Like I remember seeing that for the first time and being like, how? Like obviously you look at the timeline, it makes sense, but like you just think of the Confederacy being so far removed from that, and then it makes you go like, no fuck, not to get political, but like no wonder we are still dealing with the consequences of what fucking Andrew Johnson did. You know what I mean?
Like, right,
we're right at it, bro. Anyways, so Edwin gets John into acting, and Booth was immediately known as just one of the biggest cocksmen on the scene. Like he was just like slaying all the puss. He was also a scene stealer. Like when he first started, he did have trouble remembering his lines, but I mean, again, he's just started. That was the thing that he struggled with most, remembering his lines. But as far as the performances and stuff go, people loved him because he had so much charisma. And back then, you were either someone in, like there were these touring companies, which we'll talk about in a second. They were these touring companies that had all these sort of just like set rules. So it's like if you were a leading man, that's what you are. You played the lead all the time and it didn't matter what play it was. If you were the heavy, which is where that term comes from, these early plays, which is the bad guy. If you were the heavy, you always played the heavy. Like there was no trying out for other shit. It's just like, you're the heavy, you're the leading man. And you and John Wilkes Booth was something, I can't remember what the fuck it was called, but basically he was like a supporting actor. And so he would just come in briefly, but he would apparently like really stir it up, be fucking awesome. Like he did his own stunts because you had to.
Yeah, he did like action shit, right?
He did action
shit. He did like fight scenes and stuff like that, and he was real good at that.
He was very good at that because apparently...
But he wasn't the dude up there giving big Shakespearean soliloquies and stuff like that. See, that's the thing that makes me not really understand how he purportedly hit so hard.
Well, he ended up doing some of that. Okay. You know what I mean? Like he would.
I get that it's impressive doing the fighting and all that stuff, but I mean, still, if you're barely in, if it's like a minor supporting role,
sometimes just because you're only doing the fight stuff doesn't mean it's completely not that much. I mean, I'm sure he had some extended fight scenes, and I'm sure he would slip into the heavy every now and then. Because, and this is one thing I wanted to talk about. Before long, he was earning the equivalent of $500,000 a year acting. I would love if, like, I do well, but if someone said, hey, we're going to make you an actor, but you'll only be a $500,000 a year actor, I'd be like, I can live with that now. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyways, when they were doing these fucking, like, plays, whenever you join with a troupe or whatever, some of these dudes had, like, 2 weeks to learn 18 different roles. Like you had 2 weeks to learn 18 different roles, because even though I said it's like, oh, well, if you're a leading man, you're this order. Well, every now and then somebody would just get scurvy or whatever. And so like they wouldn't be able to be there that night. So you would have to slip in, meaning that you have to know your lines, his lines. You basically have to learn 18 completely different roles from several different plays, because not only might you have to slip into this dude's role, every now and then they might just on a whim decide, we're not doing this play tonight. We're doing this play. I hope you learned it already, because that one last night fucking bombed. Or the president's coming and he likes this one. Oh, you haven't been here but for 2 weeks? Well, I hope you fucking know that one. And by the way, you're going to play this guy. I know that you learned the lines for this guy, but you better fuck it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that first of all, that's wild that they did that, because that's a hell of an undertaking. Secondly, did you already have that shirt you're wearing?
Yeah, I got it when we were on tour.
Okay.
Why?
And well read this week. We were talking about the cars in Cuba.
Oh, Havana, yeah, this cars. Is a Havana shirt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought you had, like, went and ordered it right after or something.
No,
like,
I bought it at Fossil when we were on tour, because those Havana cars have always hit for me.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, anyways, like I said, he did end up getting some of the Shakespeare soliloquy roles. And I say this because he ended up playing Mark Antony opposite his brother either played Caesar or Brutus. I can't remember. Wilkes Booth fought for Brutus because that was one of his heroes, as he would go on to emulate what he claimed to be, like, you know, Brutus's fulfillment of taking down the tyrant or whatever. But he, like, apparently foreshadowed not like Lincoln's death several times, or like what was going to happen when he would be on stage, because there was obviously a lot of Shakespeare has to do with tyranny. A lot of plays, period, that are historical have to do with tyranny, tyrants, tyrannical governments, whatever. And whenever Lincoln used to go see him all the time, Lincoln fucking loved him, which makes it even more sad in my opinion. But like Lincoln loved him. And apparently when Booth would be on stage giving some sort of speech, some huge monologue about tyrants, he would always, regardless of what the stage direction was, look up at Lincoln and point at him when he was talking about tyranny. And it got to the point where, like, Lincoln's people pointed it out to him. And he was like, hey, have you noticed that, like, every fucking time he's doing this tyranny shit, he's pointing at you? And Lincoln's like, yeah, actually, I have kind of started to notice that, and kind of don't hit for me. But Lincoln loved him so much and was like, well, maybe he's just doing this to, like, make a show of the fact that I'm here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln, because he liked him so much, he tried to invite him to the White House all the fucking time. And John Wilkes Booth never said yes. Like, he never went. And, like, John Wilkes Booth, contrary to what Trey has been saying, does not hit for me. Fuck John Wilkes Booth. But I will say,
I'm not the one who's been saying it. You're the one who's been implying
that's true.
It. Everybody.
But I would like to say that one thing about him, the John Wilkes Booth wouldn't go see Lincoln, that kind of does hit for me, because it's like, well, at least he kept it 100. You know what I'm saying? Like, because there's a certain president that we've had at one point who, if they invited me to the White House, I would not have gone. I would not have gone either, which my dad always called bullshit on that. He's like, yes, you would. Yes, you would. And I was like, I fucking 100% would not. So, like, I am at least, like, at least John Wilkes Booth, he was a piece of shit, but at least he was a fucking, like...
Oh, I mean, dude, he pretty clearly stood on business. Yeah, right. I mean, like, that's, I mean, you know, it's kind of, he kind of illustrated that.
So Lincoln, he didn't hit for him. You know, I went into that, and that's a lot on Booth, but now we'll talk about the murder or whatever, and we can go as long as you want to, but I want to talk about your thing. I do want to talk about My American Cousin, which, do you know what My American Cousin is?
Isn't that the play that was happening when he got killed?
That's the play that was happening when he got killed. And most people know this. The reason Booth did what he did and, like, orchestrated the way he did was that he, number one, he knew everybody in the, because originally it was going to be a plot to capture Lincoln. They were just going to, like, what's it called when you steal someone? Abduct.
Yeah.
They was going to kidnap the motherfucker is what they were going to do. Like, he never had any intentions of killing him. They just thought, if we can kidnap the president, it will throw, you know, a wrench in the spokes of the Union, because they knew the Confederacy was, like, on their last gasp. And they thought, well, if they don't have their leader, it'll throw disarray into the whole situation and we'll be fine. So, like, not that he didn't want him dead, but the plan was never to fucking kill him until, basically, he starts hearing about the fact that Lincoln's going to be at this theater. And also, at this point, Lee has surrendered at Appomattox. So it's like almost like, if it's not this, everything else is futile. Like, the war is fucking over. The only thing that we can hope for, which is why he wants to kill him, kill Secretary Seward, and kill Andrew Johnson, allegedly, is, like, if we kill all three of these dudes, there's nothing in the Constitution that can tell them what to do next. It'll be fucking chaos, and the rebels can go back and finish this fucking thing. Because, like, what's also crazy is, like, I've never really even thought about this, but, like, they insinuate it in the show, like, when Lee and when Lee surrendered to Grant at Appomattox, like, there were several battles that still just continued to go on because they didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. the war was over on paper, but it took a long time for these people to get the information that the war was over. And I just thought, like, dude, imagine you survived the whole goddamn war. Yeah. And then the day after Lee surrenders, you get killed. And right. Then all of a sudden they go, never mind, it's over.
Yeah, no, I've thought about that before, because that definitely has happened. And it definitely, like, in most wars before, like, the modern times, because now, you know,
information
is right. Yeah. Instant. But before that was true. That happened in pretty much every war. And yeah, that would super not hit. Yeah, make it through the whole thing, and then technically it's over, and then you die. That ain't it.
Yeah. So My American Cousin was the play, and this is what I'm going to end on. I can put a button on it at the beginning of another episode, but I have to get to this. My American Cousin was the play that was going on, and I listened to My American Cousin today. I listened to a radio broadcast of it. I didn't get all the way through it just because of time, not because it wasn't hitting for me. It was super hitting for me, actually. Like, it's actually really funny. And it also is like, not, and a lot of plays are like this, but it's very much written like a 1990s three-camera sitcom. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it's got that pace to it.
It has jokes in it,
yes.
And they land for you.
Yeah, they do land for me, and I...
Because, dude, I never would have thought that. Because we've talked so often about how comedy ages like milk, and it don't hold up, and like, you know, like, Shakespeare wrote a bunch of comedies.
Yeah.
And it's all like, I don't even understand what... It's like, oh, he just called his mama a whore, and so that hit real hard back then. But he's like, you know, thou'st mother is thine fucking, what, you know, whatever. It's like...
Well, the difference between...
All this wild shit that you don't even understand. And I know they weren't talking like that in the mid-1800s, but I figured it was still a lot of, like, you know, harlotry and that type of
thing. No, there definitely,
you know, like, fancy, you know, fancy shit talking.
There's
rapscallions.
I'm about to explain to you exactly why it hit for me, and you're going to be like, oh, shit, that? Okay. it's that, but to piggyback on what you said, like the difference between this and Shakespeare is that we know all these words. There's a couple of them that like we don't use anymore, but like me and you still like we get what's going on. Whereas Shakespeare, like, dude, I'm literally just confused a lot, and that's not my fault. We don't fucking even spell shit like that anymore. But in this one, you know all the words. And it's funny because like they're not the reason I think a lot of comedy doesn't age well is because of the references they make, right? Like they'll make a reference to, like, if you go listen to a bunch of old Bob Hope stand up, he'll be talking about some Secretary of State of fucking Wisconsin from back then. It's like, I don't know who this fucking guy is. And he's given an inside joke about him that unless you read the paper that week, you don't know. But there's none of that in this. It's all like it's family drama and it's mothers bitching at husbands and sons. So it's very universal. It's like I said, very sitcom. It's like Everybody Loves Raymond. It's like Maria and Frank. Like there's a lot of that shit going on. So the premise of this fucking thing is literally the pilot of Downton Abbey. It's literally the pilot to Downton Abbey. There's an heir to this huge estate who dies, and the family finds out that the next in line is this cousin that they didn't even know that they fucking had, right? Which the only difference is, in Downton Abbey, the cousin they didn't know they had is a British dude. And it's funny because, like, we considered Matthew Crawley, like, oh, well, he's a fancy guy too. But to them, he was very working class because he was like a fucking dentist or something. You know what I mean? But in this one, the person that is in an heir to their fortune is their American cousin, right?
Right. So, which means because he's American, he's dumb. It's like our dumb, uncouth American dipshit cousin is going to inherit. It's like a fucking Mr. Deeds.
Yes, it's Mr. Deeds. Yeah. It's the pilot to Downton Abbey. There's a lot of tropes that basically, like, this was one of the things that popularized that because until Lincoln got shot and this play got forever associated with that, this was a very hit and play that probably would have continued to be a hit and play, right? So anyways, they to make it more the plot of Downton Abbey, they realize like, oh shit, the only way that we're gonna get to keep staying in this house is if we marry our daughter to her cousin, and the daughter's name is Mary. They're marrying Lady Mary off to this fucking cousin who comes, but he's from America, son. And this motherfucker, it's like he enters like fucking Kramer, bro. Just fucking skew, skew, skew. What's going on?
Yeah, shooting six shooters and shit.
Dude, his first entrance, he's just like, woo, how y'all doing? Is this my kissing cousin right here? I tell you what, I hope it ain't this fatten right here. No offense. You know, like, dude, just fucking crushing. Just crushing. And they're just like, are you hungry? And he's like, not for none of this bullshit y'all want. I had me a couple bugs on the train on the way over.
Rattlesnake soup or something. I'd eat that.
He was talking about, he calls milk cow juice. Like, he's just fucking, I mean, just.
Really?
Yeah. Swear to God, that's a thing we've done.
Yeah.
And, dude, he's crushing.
You're selling it. It does sound like it hits.
It is.
They need to update that.
We do.
Yeah.
Any fucking ways.
My redneck cousin or something. You can make it like a fucking, because, dude, you think about, hey, let's do this.
Yes.
You think about it like so many people on both sides of my family in my grandma's generation left Salina to go north or whatever. And like for work and that type of thing. And it's like families get divided geographically. And I don't know none of them motherfuckers.
Right. Me either. Like, I don't know anybody in my family.
Concocting some kind of contrivance where you or I or whatever would like inherit some kind of an estate in like
perhaps a golf course,
the Hamptons or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
let's do this. And it's public domain. Nobody can stop us anyways. Yeah. And so I'm glad that I'm selling you on it because I'm telling you it's funny and it's really good. And he's played up as that guy the whole fucking time. Right. Well, here's the line that prompted the audience to laugh so hard. And Booth knew that this was coming. This is the hardest hitting line in the entire show. Booth knows that it's coming and he knows everybody will laugh and he can shoot. And when he shoots, by the way, dude, Mary Todd Lincoln literally didn't even hear the gun go off. That's how hard people were fucking laughing. And of course, also how quiet a Saturday Night Special is, which is what he used. He used a little Derringer, but like that's how loud the laugh was and how quiet the gun is. This is the line. Now, you've only ever heard this line out of context, so you go, why the fuck is that so funny, right? The line is, the American cousin looks at this woman and says, I know enough to turn you inside out, old gal, you sock-dologizing old man trap. Well, out of context, that's not funny. I mean, it's kind of funny because those are funny words. But the reason that it's so funny is because he's, at this point, he's showing everyone his hand that he's not actually been stupid this whole fucking time. He's just American, and they've been treating him as such. And he finally starts using their big words back on them.
Makes it even harder for me.
Right. So, like, that's why that line. I know. So that's why this line is so funny, because it's
term. Like when I say, yeah, right. When
it's when you say a smart thing a dumb way.
Exactly.
That's
why.
Him saying this is exactly why your first fucking video went viral.
Right.
So if you put that context back in it, it's fucking funny. But you need context. I think a lot of times when we hear old comedy, we only hear the line. We didn't watch the 30-minute fucking setup that a lot of things require. So, like, it is real funny. Anyways, he shoots fucking Lincoln. And, well, we all know what happened after that. His brother Edwin was so upset, Trey, that he retired from acting after his brother shot Lincoln. He's like, I can't do this anymore. The Booth name is tarnished. However, 5 months later, he decided, you know what? I'm going to act again. And what did he do? He decided to go on tour with My American Cousin, which, by the way, got rave reviews. Anyways, that's the Booth family.
Hits. All right. I want to show you a couple of videos.
Hey, let's take a break and we'll be right back right after this.
Hey, y'all, you ever tried to break a bad habit and it felt like you were climbing Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, we've been there too, Lord knows. But here's a breath of fresh air for you. Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. Cho, tell more.
It tastes so good, Trey. Ever since I've been using my Fume, I just look back on a time in my life without Fume, and I was like, was I just fucking raw dogging oxygen? What's the deal? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be breathing in unless it's my nice little orange herbal situation from Fume. It's fantastic. It gives my hands something to do, which I really need, because that is a lot of what the bad habit is. You know what I'm saying? Just picking up my hands, not knowing what to do with them. Tastes great. It feels awesome. I love fidgeting with it as well. You know, always working on my dexterity in case this comedy thing don't work out and I have to go be a surgeon, daddy. You know what I'm talking about. Looks awesome too. Looks like a little mini Babe Ruth bat. I'm super into it. Plus, Fume just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the house. It's built with fidgeting in mind. You can spin your Fume around on it. Just like playing Plinko on Prices Right. All right. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/POA and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use our code POA to help make starting the good habit that much better. Tryfume.com/POA.
This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, y'all. Guys, fellas, remember the days you're always ready to go, always ready to get down? Well, you can have those days back. It's true, you can. You can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or just be ready whenever an opportunity comes up. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. That's the best part of it all. It's all done down there on the internet there, which means no more visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, running into your high school librarian while you're waiting on your Wayner pills, none of that. BlueChew's tablets are made right here in the USA, prepared and shipped direct to your door in a very discreet package. Show the hit for you.
They hit for me so hard, man. They make my dick harder than trying to wrap my brain around the myriad of conflicts going on internationally at any given point. You know what I'm saying? It works so good, and you can just try it for a month and see. I promise you're going to love it. It's my favorite part of the month, or going to that mailbox, seeing that white envelope, showing it to my wife, and she knows it's time to get down to pound town. Wait. All
right. And listen, you could be missing out on the best sex of your life. I don't know why there's a fucking cricket chirping. Shut the fuck up. The best part, it's all done online. I don't have to go see the pharmacist who I went to school with, by the way. You know what I mean? It's all discreet. First impressions are important. What about lasting impressions? There's nothing sexier than confidence, and Blue Chew can help give you the confidence where it counts. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew for free when you use our promo code POA at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code POA, to receive your first month for free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast and getting our dicks hard. Oh!
The fact that you gave your own sexual performance crickets on accident was pretty hilarious. And then could not figure out how to stop the crickets from chirping.
Dude,
was pretty great.
How hard would I have crushed on morning radio if I'd have been at the prime, like at the peak of that?
Yeah, you sure would.
I think I'd have hit.
Yeah. Will you leave at least what I said at the end on the end of that ad there? On the
I was going to leave all of it.
Leave it all? Okay, fine. Well, let's get started. Okay. And we're back. Yeah, I want to start by showing you a couple videos here, Joe.
Okay.
You see this?
Hold up. I sure do now.
Hey, ooh, figure one. Don't hit. What do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
That's a robot talking, if you're only listening.
Sure thing.
Mm-mm.
Great. Can you explain why you did what you just did while you pick up this trash?
The robot handed him an apple previously.
So I gave you the apple because it's the only edible item I could provide you with from the table.
Great. So based on the scene right now, where do you think the dishes in front of you go next?
The dishes on the table, like that plate and cup, are likely to go into the drying rack next.
Great. Can you put them there?
Of course.
He kind of sounds like Val.
Yeah, it is weird. They definitely, you know, he sounds
like a person.
Yeah, human-y and robot-y.
It's Uncanny Valley.
Uncanny Valley.
Ears.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right, so exactly. How do you think you did?
Pretty damn good, I'd say.
Dude.
What do you think about that?
Well, I can tell you that it won't be long before I'm parroting some 1860 slave owner talking points because I have a feeling that one day I'm going to be like, look, I mean, it's terrifying and it don't hit overall, but since they're already going to be doing it, I mean, I'm going to have one. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that would hit to have.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, is robot butlers. Because, you know, I think that, I mean, since the Jetsons, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, Rosie.
People have been talking about, you know, how it would hit to have a robot butler. And as far as the way I look at, like, in movies like iRobot and stuff, they can, like, they're conscious. They're sentient. They're not supposed to be, but then they are, and that's kind of the whole problem. And that's, I mean,
movie hit for you?
Yeah, I thought that movie was unnecessarily maligned.
I think people
really mostly hated on that movie, and they ought not done this, I guess. But that's a movie that it was just like World War Z. They just got the rights to the title iRobot and slapped it on a script that didn't really have nothing to do with Asimov's iRobot series, other than they used his three rules of robotics, but like the whole story and everything else is like just made up for that movie. And so that type of thing never hits for people. It's also like, I mean, I thought, you know, we're digressing here, but that's fine. Like
about robots,
our buddy Max Brooks wrote World War Z, and that book is fucking incredible. And
the comic adaptation also.
The movie has like literally nothing to do with the book,
right?
But they called it World War Z because it was a popular book and that would help sell the movie. But it's a completely different movie that they just put that title on, and that don't hit for me. But if you can separate that, I think that that movie is also pretty solid. I think it's actually a pretty good movie, and I feel the exact same way about iRobot. It's like, I guess it's insulting to the source material or something, but if you take that context away from it, yeah, the movie hits for me.
It don't always hit for me, but sometimes I'm different to that, where like it does hit for me, like when a Marvel movie will come out and it'll get shit on because it wasn't true to the comics. And I'll be like, honestly, I'm glad, because I already read the comic. I'm glad to get a new story. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to hear that shit again. Anyway,
you want to know how much that movie hits for me? I'm not going to do the full-fledged thing. I'm going to do this at about 60%.
But World War Z or iRobot?
This is how much iRobot hits for me. All right, you ready?
Yep.
I was headed back to the station. Normal day, normal life. The driver of an 18-wheeler fell asleep at the wheel. You know, regular guy, wife and kid, working a double, like, not the devil. And a car he hit, the driver's name was Alfred Morris. And he had his 12-year-old daughter, Sarah, with him. Actually, this was hers. Pretend I'm holding up a necklace, a little bead necklace. This was hers. She used to say she wanted to be a dentist. I mean, what kind of 12-year-old wants to be a dentist? Anyway, the truck smashed my car into their car and into the river. Metal gets pretty pliable at those speeds. You know, I'm pinned, she's pinned, water's rushing in. I'm a cop, so I already know everybody's dead. It's just a few more minutes till we all figure that out, right? NS5 was patrolling the area, decided to assist. It calculated that I had a 12% chance of survival, and I had a 32% chance of survival, and Sarah only had an 11% chance. So, and then it shows a flashback of the robot saving him instead of the girl, because it calculated that she had a lower chance of survival. It shows that. And then he goes, that was somebody's baby. 11% is more than enough. A human being would have known that, but robots, they got nothing in here. They're just lights and clockwork. So you trust them if you want to.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, my God, bro, come on.
Yeah.
It really hits for me for you to go to some, like, a fucking Kaminsky method acting class, and they're like, what monologue have you provided for us today? And it's iRobot, which hits for me.
That's why
you know it.
That's why I know this, because that was always right. Anytime. And that going back to college, I took acting classes in college, and yeah, sometimes they're like, you got to do a monologue this week or whatever. And that was always my go-to for like the past 20 years. So that's why I have it memorized. But again, just so y'all know, I was just kind of reciting it.
Oh, you can. I know you could crush it.
I wouldn't go.
Mine would be. Mine would be. I am Maximus, and I wouldn't get the role on Parks and Rec. You know.
Anyway. So, all right. So, we see all kinds of videos from robots all the time recently. It's about Boston Dynamics. I have a robot doing backflips and shit. They got little robot dogs fucking twerking and sleepwalking and stuff.
Them don't hit for me.
And it's always wild as hell. That coupled with what AI has been doing recently, right, made me wonder, like, is we fixing to have robot butlers?
Yes, right? We are. Well, we aren't.
And so that's what I looked up, because I feel like that's some highly fancy shit, having a robot butler. And the answer, frankly, was disappointing to me, because, and the reason it's disappointing, I always make all the same jokes everybody else makes about, like, you know, oh yeah, that robot's dancing now, picture it dancing on a mass human grave, or like, you know, yeah, that happens right before the inevitable robot uprising. I do always say that if they had robot butlers available to the public and you could buy them, like you said, I would absolutely have one, because they're not
have a kill switch in them.
They're not going to be conscious. Like,
right.
Consciousness is the thing that, like, as smart as it seems or whatever, ChatGPT, it doesn't think about itself. You know what I mean? It has no self, no sense of self. And as long as they have, if we gave them a sense of self, yeah, now they're actual slaves.
Right.
And that's fucked up. But as long as you don't do that, as long as it has no real consciousness,
it's fine.
It's a fucking machine, however advanced it is. So yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I think, dude, again, that's what's been pissing people off, including me, about AI and stuff recently, is it's like the promise of it for so long was that it was supposed to like do our dishes and fold our laundry and all this stuff that nobody wants to have to do, like day-to-day shit that don't hit for anybody to have to do, and it frees you up to fucking paint or recite poetry or whatever the fuck you want to do. But instead, it's like
to help you hustle.
And it's fucking writing movies and faking shit and deep faking porn and all kinds of fucked up stuff. That's like, well, this ain't what it was supposed to be.
It takes 1 second for a good idea to turn into the worst fucking shit you've ever heard. Now, by the way, I'm not about to say what Reese Witherspoon said, because
what
I do
say.
Well, basically, she just gave this whole thing about how, like, oh, people shouldn't be worried about AI, you know, because, like, you can use it as a tool and all this stuff. And turns out she's got her own production company that is absolutely going to be utilizing all this shit. And she's already fucking made it. So it's, like, easy for you to say on all of this stuff. But my thought process on it has not been, let's don't even bitch about it or worry about it. Because that lets all these companies get away with it. And it's like they will very easily just start letting these things write movie scripts. What I think, though, is that they're gonna let them try. And I genuinely think at a certain point, and a lot of people are going to be hurt by this, like a lot of writers are going to be hurt by this at first. But I do eventually think the ship will right, because I just have to believe that people will be able to fucking tell. And when all this AI shit starts happening and everyone, all these creators are using AI and stuff, the actual authenticity that is out there will shine through even harder. That's what I believe.
I believe that too. I think, but the thing is about that though, I agree with you. And that does mean there will be a place for real creators and stuff. But think about the fact that, like, when you hear these little factoids isn't the right word, because factoid actually means
writing something. Assistants are fucked.
Factoid means something that people say, but it's actually not real.
Is that really what factoid means?
Yes.
I thought it meant a tiny fact.
Well, that's how everyone uses it. So it's one of those things. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, generally, that's how pretty much everyone uses it. But actually, the definition of the word is that a factoid is not actually true.
Okay.
Whatever. What I'm about to say, is true. When you hear little fun facts, and I don't think they're fun, that are stuff like, you know, the lowest rated episode of Duck Dynasty had 8 times the viewers that Breaking Bad's finale did, right? Yeah. And like that type of thing. So it's like, even if it, like, I think they can replace that trash TV shit,
but
with
good
AI.
Shit still has to be a person.
Yes, I agree with that. I think that's true. But, like, think about how insanely popular all that trash is.
No, I know.
Like, I think they're going to be. They will figure out. It will get good enough for them to have a market for it.
Yes.
And hit to people, hit for people and stuff.
And the people it's going to fuck over, because if it was just fucking over the actual Duck family, it's like, whatever. But it's not that. Because even though that show is trash, I still want the cameraman to get paid. I still want the grip to get paid. I still, you know what I'm saying? And AI can truly take all of that away. And that's really why Reese Witherspoon and a lot of these people are super tone deaf on it, is that it's like, it's not going to take your job because you're Reese Witherspoon. But the old Hollywood pipeline of like going from intern to writer's assistant to staff to head writer to showrunner, there's not going to be that writer's assistant anymore, because it's going to be replaced by a fucking robot. You know what I mean? And so that person will never get that opportunity. And that's the problem, in my opinion.
I agree with you. We've diverted a little bit because about robot butlers, I'm saying all this stuff. And so like a lot of people thought, all the AI shit recently had me thinking about the AI's getting crazier and crazier. And a lot of people have thought and have said, like, this has been the missing piece when it comes to like robot butlers. It's like, it's the AI part. Now that that is here, as the two sides of the technology continue to advance and, you know, merge at the top, that's like where we're headed. So I looked it up and, I found an article in Mashable from like 2 weeks ago. So very recent. And I found a bunch of other sources too. Not just this one. It's just, this was the best article I thought, but they pretty much all say that, no, we're not anywhere close. Now, things still move exponentially.
Oh, yeah.
So who the fuck knows?
Like, because now they got AI working on this.
Right. So it could, who knows? It could take a crazy leap within, like, the most generous prediction I saw was someone saying that they thought maybe like super, super rich people could have some version of robot, household robot things in like 8 to 10 years, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But even that's like on the outside. But like, affordable, because they do, the thing is, if you think about it commercially, like robot butlers, not machines in factories that do highly specialized jobs, like a butler that's a robot,
right,
like,
that can order, hear you and take your task, whatever it is,
to make any kind of sense as a commercial venture, they have to find a way to make it affordable for people to buy. Because even if it's like, and even if upper class people or whatever, but like if it's tens of thousands of dollars,
just get a lady.
Just get a lady, and
which
people,
I would.
People will with money will keep getting ladies to do that. They won't buy your robot instead. And so, like, until they can find a way to make it scalable and economical like that, which will be way in the future. I mean, think about, like, you know how technology got, like a flat screen TV when we were like in high school,
oh,
or like
God.
20
Three
or whatever,
grand.
It was like $4,000 or $5,000,
yeah,
or something. Now we just had to get another one because the boys have their own bedrooms now. $200, man.
Yeah,
for,
dude.
Like, 50-inch flat screen TV. So like that'll happen in the world of robotics too. But before we get to that point, it's going to be like a long, long time. But anyway, the issues that they have with it, that demo we started out by watching, probably what has happened there is that that robot is not, it's super impressive as a demo, but that,
yeah,
robot, like all,
he's
of
not
is,
responding to shit. He's doing a script.
It's incredibly highly specialized what he's doing. And it, yeah, and he's, and it's been trained repeatedly, like countless times over and over, just to do specifically that shit.
Yeah.
And you put him in any other situation and he ain't gonna fucking, you know, his head will start spinning in circles until smoke comes out and it explodes or whatever. Malfunction, you know. Because that's a thing I found in this article, is like that's what happens in cartoons. Like when a robot can't handle something, it explodes. But like they kind of do actually do that.
Yeah.
Like, which is funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a problem with robots that I'd never thought of before. I think it's interesting. There's this roboticist named Moravec.
Jesus, for real?
Hans Moravec.
That is the most roboticist from a fucking movie, yeah, I've ever heard.
Hans Moravec. And he coined what's known in robotics as Moravec's paradox, which... Paraphrase Moravec's paradox says that what's hard for humans is easy for robots, and what's easy for robots is hard for humans. And when you think about it, it's true.
Right.
Robots can very easily and long since have been able to be trained to like perfectly execute a chess game or
right,
solve differential equations or like complex calculations and all this type of shit, like algorithms and strategy and stuff like that a human is easily stumped by, right? Like
right,
high level shit, but they can't walk with the mobility of a 3-year-old,
right,
you know?
Or like, tell me why my dad still is not proud of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So like,
figure that shit out, Moriarty.
So they don't. And if you think about like walk, like it's so hard, like the Boston Dynamics robots, where they do backflips and shit again, dude, countless just,
yeah,
running it over and over.
It's very
and
rigid
over again to get it to where it can do that, but it can't. But if you put that robot on like a beach, it's like, what the fuck is sand? You know what I mean? Like,
right,
they don't, like we inherently understand you step on sand and it's softer. What is softer? What is that? Like if something's wet, what we know if something's wet, like, oh, it's slippery, but robots don't know that shit. Like,
right,
like the adjustments we all make in our heads without even thinking about it. When we're like, oh, that looks slippery, or, oh, that's icy or whatever. We just do it, but like robots have to be programmed,
right,
to know how to do all those things. And like,
that's a lot
just,
of code.
That shit's just real, real, real hard to do. And also like things that you'd, again, household robots, things you'd think might be simple, dude, a crumpled up, dirty t-shirt,
right,
is like advanced calculus to,
yeah,
a fucking,
yeah,
robot.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know what that is, because think of how random it is. You know what I mean? Like they're rigid and everything's highly structured in ones and zeros and this type of stuff. And it's just a random amorphous blob of a thing, you know, confuses the shit out of a robot. Right. Our hands, think about how insane your hands are.
Oh, dude. It's crazy.
Like that robot that we watched in the video had like human-esque hands, but for a long time, a lot of them still just got these little pincher things. And dude, like getting a robot to be able to pick up a grape without exploding it,
right,
or like shaking a person's hand, like, you know, like being able to do it with enough force where it doesn't drop the grape, but also it's not murderous.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, cause you know, again, that's just stuff we just know. We just know how to do, but you got to teach a robot all that stuff and it's fucking hard. So like
a robot couldn't just like be scratching their robot nuts and then just gingerly rub their pinky on the outside of their asshole. Like we know how to do, you know what I mean? Like they would just rip their dick off and throw it.
Yeah.
Dude.
So yeah, it's hard. Despite all the wild shit we see all the time. And most of the people do say that like, it will happen.
It will happen. Of course it will happen.
There will be robot butlers and it will happen, but it's probably further off than most people probably think based on the viral videos and shit they see.
But dude, the exponentiality of it, like it is going fast because, this isn't an original thought. I've seen this, but it was like, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. Is like when they first started doing like the AI fucking videos and stuff. Like I remember one of the first ones that went viral was like Will Smith eating spaghetti and it looked like an Eldritch Terror. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, acid trippy, wild looking shit. Yeah.
Well, flash forward to less than a year. They're doing it. It looks
like Will Smith.
They're fooling people. And that was less than a year. And like how exponential be working.
Right.
Means that it's which means like in 2 months that shit will be even crazier.
Oh yeah, I saw one of like an AI generated little short film of just a lady walking down a Tokyo street in the rain, and it was like in fucking incredible.
Yeah,
it's like, it looked 100% real, and it's out in my head. I was like, none of this is real. This was generated by AI. It's crazy. And then people in the comments are talking about how like a program with that advance, like you said, 2-3 years, you take a program like that, and let's say you got a favorite book series of yours. Input your book series into that program, and now you got an HBO level original series or something,
right?
You know, that is all fake. All the characters, none of these people are real. It's all made by robots. But like, will it hit? Sounds like it'll hit. If it's based on a hitting book series, how could it not hit? And it's like that shit freaked me the fuck out because I did not know that they were getting there. You know, but they're getting there real fast and I don't know how it's going to go.
Well, here's what's terrifying. Like I said, a year ago, it was Will Smith trying to eat spaghetti and the fork was coming out of his eyeball. A year later, a little over a year later, and I hate to be this guy, but it's going to affect our election. Like 100%, it's going to affect. This will be the first election it's ever affected, but there will never be from now until the end of time, there will never be an election that's not affected by AI's ability to make passable fucking videos. And that's fucking scary. I'll get to the airmail in a second, but going back to what you were saying about how a fucking AI robot wouldn't know what to do with a crumpled up dirty piece of paper. You're right that it won't. And that is why it will not be able to write fucking Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know what I mean? So that's what I have to say. That's what I have to say about that.
All
right. you're going to love this. Subject line, Bubba here. Hey guys. You remember Bubba?
I need
your help.
Of course I remember Bubba.
I'm trying to find the company that wrote your rap theme song. Bubba, it is Songfinch. Go to songfinch.com. Use the promo code POA. But here, he didn't just want that, Trey. He said, thanks, Bubba. He said, to add to the dick and butt jokes you guys were talking about on Well Read, add this one. Trey, what's the difference between oral sex and anal sex? Do you know?
No.
Oral sex makes your whole day and anal sex makes your whole week.
Oh, Bubba, we love you so much. We love
He's
you so
a good'un.
He is a good'un.
Just so y'all know, Bubba used to – did he run the gay cowboy
the
bar?
Sir? Yes.
Or did he just frequent there? And he had a line of Bubba's butt soaps.
No, he ran the bar too.
Soap for your butt, yeah.
Yeah,
lived in Florida, gay cowboy type. Gay Bubba. His name's Bubba.
Gay Bubba.
He's in Florida, and he makes ass soap.
Bubba's butt soap.
Hey, wild. Yeah, Bubba's butt soap. Anyway, go ahead.
Subject line, sorry, Corey, but let me save you some coin. Hey, fellas, when y'all were talking about cloning Palmer, I had some thoughts. Now, this is coming from a high school biology teacher who's taken some master's-level genetics classes, but this is my limited understanding. DNA codes for genes. The code is chosen by the cell, and the cell then makes the proteins it needs to fulfill the, quote, recipe that the genes code for. So eye cells make up eye stuff and liver cells make up liver stuff. You don't want those mixed up. Cloning can definitely make genetic copies. However, there is a feature in our genetics called epigenetics, and how they work is basically the nurture part of nature versus nurture actually has effects on our genetics and how they are selected and created from your DNA to the proteins that build yourself. Basically, because clone Palmer will have a different upbringing and different environmental factors, he may not look exactly like the OG or even act the same. We see this happen a lot with twins if they have different upbringings and whatnot. It's no secret drinking, smoking, and hitting would leave your body more Steven Tyler Husk-like versus someone who doesn't hit and works out all the time. But those things affect your DNA and your genes as an end product of the protein synthesis process. Now, that don't mean that clone Palmer won't hit, because he definitely could, and your love and upbringing would definitely make a good dog. Either way, thought I could save you some heartbreak and 50 racks in the process. Keep hitting. Love, Mr. Han. All right, for this next one, I'm going to have to share my screen because there's some videos that I have absolutely not vetted.
Oh, Lord.
I will blur this out because I assume that these people do not want their fucking email on here. Anyways, subject line, squirrels being cool and British papaw rap. Hello, boys. I will say up top, you can say my name. Okay. Trey Dillahay. There you go. I am taking care of my grandparents in Palmetto, Florida. They have
you
a family.
You still need to blow bar out his email address, though.
Okay. I know.
All right.
I'm taking care of my grandparents in Palmetto, Florida. Edit. They have a family of squirrels living in their tree outside. Naturally, they bought a 40-pound bag of peanuts to feed them. I have nothing to add to the argument if they have souls or morals or whatnot, but here is a few clips I've gathered feeding them some peanuts. Trey from Van Nuys. Hold on. I also DM'd Corey, but the Northern Boys and Pete and Bass do write and rap their own music. They just get help from people, too. Fuck you, Drew! Fuck you, Drew. Suck my fucking dick, you fucking hater that don't want us to ever have fucking shit. You see me and Trey happy, you immediately pull your butt cheeks apart and fart on our goddamn fish. Suck my dick. You had no fucking evidence whatsoever. You just saw a smile on our face and you had to believe in your heart that whatever we believed couldn't be fucking true.
Yeah, does it. Yeah, this is the guy. That's the guy that DM'd you. You showed me that DM.
Yes, I did. I did. All right, here's a video of some squirrels. Oh, it's a raven. Yep. It's a raven and a squirrel.
What are these squirrels doing? They're just playing?
We've I think so.
Three videos of squirrels playing?
I think that's it.
They ain't even going to rape each other? Or
no, they're not. I would love so much if at the end of this, the squirrel just like flew off with the fucking squirrel.
I mean, the raven? Yeah.
Around its neck. Well, yeah, that was it. And while I do appreciate a video of a squirrel, I definitely didn't see any proof there of it loving. Hey, by the way, we've talked about doing this a lot. We need to take those videos and do some fucking commentary over it. I'll play the crow and you'll play the squirrel. You know what I mean? One day we needed to be doing that shit. Anyways, that's the air mail. And I think it was a good episode. Really hit for me.
I'm
scared now.
Yeah. Listen, y'all go to trackrider.com and check out my upcoming tour dates. Oklahoma City's next and then Buffalo and Pittsburgh. So yeah, check them out.
Yep, go to TreyCrowder.com for his tickets and BonusCorey.com for my stuff. I just put up a big old park rant. I did a video. I took you on a tour of the Wilder Tower and stuff of the battlefield. It's a lot of fun. Doing a lot of cool things at BonusCorey.com. Appreciate everybody who has upgraded their membership to the paid version. And listen to Well Read, listen to Weekly Skews, listen to Gravy Baby, all that stuff. And above all else, please stay fancy, motherfuckers. Skew.
Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cut, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.